You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The King came back in the beat rock. The Jay-Z white in the catalog. The kids are legends, the gods.
Hey, welcome in to a very special edition of Still Potable. My name is Brian Robb from MassLive.com. Sam and Jay are en route back from the West Coast, so we have a very special guest for you coming up shortly here. Before we get to that, I just want to remind you that this free episode of Still Potable is powered by Prize Picks, the exclusive daily fantasy partner of the CLNS Media Network. And you can find this video on the CLNS channel this week. You can subscribe there. But let's get to the lead here. We got a big guest today. We have sports columnist for the Boston Globe, host of Gasper and Murray on 98.5 The Sports Hub, host of the Sports Hub Celtics Show, host of Boston Globe Sports Today on NESN, which you can catch Fridays at 5 every week. Chris Gasper making his debut on Still Potable. Thanks for coming on, bud.
Hey, great to be with you, B-Rob. Sorry that I'm missing, Jay. And Sam, sorry to miss those guys.
They miss you. They were really excited when I landed you for today. And they will be, I'm sure, on for a future voyage as we will be prodding you to come back on here as the playoffs continue. But yeah, this is I'm lucky enough for people that listen. I get to talk to Chris. I produce the Sports Hub Celtics show on the Sports Hub that Chris and Jim Murray host every week. So we get in our weekly dose of Celtics talk on the weekends here, but now it's a bigger forum. Now we got no commercials right now, and we'll dive deeper here. And so this is I feel like is a good part of the season. Again, you on here, Chris. Celtics coming off a 3-2 road trip out west. I guess we'll start just there, like just initial impressions of this trip itself and where they kind of stand here. Head over heels ahead of the rest of the Eastern Conference with 65 games in.
Yeah, you know, a nice strong finish to the road trip, obviously beating Phoenix and then Utah, and also being able to get guys some rest, which I really like. Didn't really change how I feel about the team, you know, either way. I've said this before, and I'll say it here. I think the Celtics ceiling is higher than any other team. I think their best is better than anybody's best, and that includes the Nuggets. And I know the Nuggets swept the season series from the Celtics and maybe exposed, you know, some flaws in their game, but I still feel like the Celtics, if they reach their ceiling and play their best, should win the title. Nothing about this road trip changed that for me. If anything, it just sort of reinforced the one concern I have about them, which is that if they don't win the title, it will be in part because they sort of beat themselves, which is I think that's what happened against Cleveland, and to a lesser extent, but still happened against Denver.
Right. And we've rehashed that. It's the same old story on those fronts that we don't necessarily need to go into right now, but you're like, as far as that, but the guy who was at the center of both of those games to different degrees was Jason Tatum. And on this trip, actually, there was some interesting back and forth. Tatum, he struggled a bit with his shot up until the Utah game on Tuesday night. But by and large, Joe Mazzulla all year long has been, you know, continuously praising him for his sacrifice in press conferences, defending him when, you know, even when he's having a little bit of a rough patch. You brought to me before we started the show here just an interesting point in terms of what just the level of sacrifice you've kind of seen from him this year and how you think Joe Mazzulla might be trying to like play this out.
Yeah, what's interesting to me is, as you mentioned, this has been a consistent theme for Joe Mazzulla. you know, harping on the level of sacrifice from Jason Tatum after games. I think about that game at Madison Square Garden against the Knicks. The other night, obviously, you know, talking about what happened in Portland and talking about sacrifice, and there's other ways you can control the game. He keeps slipping most valuable in there whenever he can, you know, saying, well, you know, this is the way he's most valuable. And I sort of wonder how much of that being for public consumption is sort of a carrot for Jason Tatum and to make sure that they understand that they appreciate the sacrifice that Tatum is making, and to just positively reinforce that that sacrifice he's making still comes with some public plaudits. Because when you really look at it, B-Rob, I think that what Joe Mazzulla is saying is disproportional to the actual sacrifice that Jason Tatum is making. I mean, he's only down about a shot and a half per game this year. I know the scoring average is down a little bit. He's at 27. He was at 30 last year, the first Celtic to ever average 30 points per game for a season. But if you look at other guys on the team, like Jaylen Brown's down almost 3 shots per game. It's a little under 3. You know, Porzingis is down 3 shots per game. So there's other guys who are sacrificing more than Tatum. And I look at it and say, if you really look at it objectively, B-Rob, what is he really sacrificing other than stats? I mean, the team is incredible. So I wonder if there's something to this with Mazzulla where they're saying this repeatedly. He's saying this behind closed doors, but also saying it publicly to media and us so that they can keep Tatum motivated to keep making the level of sacrifice that he's making right now.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting point about you. Just to, like you said, keep banging that drum, like with him, because that is, I guess, if you just look at the past of this team, like, when have things gone awry for them? And that's usually when the points in the playoffs where the sacrificing seems to stop for patches of games or just the falling back into old habits of isolation. And I guess the biggest question I have for you now is, like, it seems like the sacrifice is there for like 47 minutes of these games, but still when you get to the close game in the final minute right now, and I don't know if we can really attributed to the sacrifice just versus strategy and there. But like with Tatum, I think he's been, when they've had these, not like, I don't call it debacles, but just like mismanagement of late game situations there, that's something where he acknowledges it after fact, but he more than not will keep going into that me versus them mentality at that point, even though he has far more viable alternatives around him this season compared to past seasons.
Yeah, it's really interesting. You and I have talked about this. It's a fascinating thing because I think that the team overall plays differently in the last minute of some of these close games or the waning seconds of some of these close games than they do during, as you said, the other 47 minutes where their real strength is the ball pops. If you're a defense, there's multiple threats on the court and you have to defend all of them and the ball is just moving quickly and they're getting teams in rotation and you look at it and you say there's a number of high-level offensive players on this team who are behaving unselfishly and stressing the defense by doing so. But then they get into these end of game scenarios and it's just the opposite. It's one guy with the ball dribbling, everybody else standing around watching. It's very stationary. And it's just like, hey, we're going to go to Jason because he's our best player. And to me, that's not the strength of the team. Yes, he is their best player, but the strength of the team is the collective, the ensemble, you know, how much talent they have. The fact that they have, you know, Drew Holiday as a really super souped up role player, that's the strength of the team. So I would like to see them utilize that more. You know, I'm looking at the stats now on stats.nba.com, and in the last minute of a game where they're behind or tied this year, Jason Tatum is 1-for-8 from the field. And part of it too, for me, is that I feel like he sometimes predetermines that he's going to take these shots no matter what, B-Rob. And if they just ran a play, like ran an action where maybe the ball, he gave up the ball and then it got back to him, I think he could get a better look. And I think that he could still take that shot, but it would be an easier shot for him and a higher percentage shot for the team.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. It's like the degree of difficulty for a lot of those has been rough, especially when you look at the defender that's been on him for those games, usually the team's best defender. And that's just, for as good as Jason Tatum is, it's just tough to take those guys in those spots when the entire, you know, the entire opponent knows what you're trying to do and will be sending help regardless. And so, yeah, that is, you know, as we get into the last month of the season, like, that's probably, that's like one thing on the checkbox you'd like to get involved there. And just the sharing the ball. Cause another, if you look at the rest of the team right now, and I want to kind of slide over here to Jaylen Brown right now. He didn't play Tuesday night against the Jazz, but he's just been on an absolute tear since the All-Star break. Right now, I have some numbers to throw out here, Gasper, like 28 points per game, shooting 53% from the field, 38% from three, six rebounds, almost four assists in nine games since that stretch, while also kind of trying to take on the toughest defensive assignment a lot of times, whether it's someone like Steph Curry or another tough wing night in and night out. Like, what have
Jamal
you
Murray
seen?
In the Denver
Jamal
game?
Murray, yeah, exactly. Jamal That's Murray another one. Exactly. Like, he played phenomenally to help them give him a chance in that game against Denver here. So in your mind, like, what's been different for Jaylen this year? We've seen growth year after year right now, but is he, do you even view this, even though obviously the numbers aren't there, is this the best season to date for him, you know, given the amount of sacrifice that he's been making?
I think it is his best season. I think it's his best season in terms of being a complete player. And that's both ends of the floor, offense, defense. I saw JJ Redick said the other day, and JJ Redick's, you know, a tough grader. He's not someone prone to hyperbole. He said he thinks Jaylen Brown should be all defense this year in the NBA. I would tend to agree with that. I think he's made a lot of strides as a distributor. You know, he doesn't always get to play that facilitator playmaker role as much, but I think he's made real strides there as a passer. We've seen that this year. The turnovers are down a little bit too. Still some turnovers that make you want to pull out your hair. I mean, that's, you know, unfortunately, he can't seem to totally eliminate those. But if you ask me what's different, I would point to Kristaps Porzingis. I think Porzingis has unlocked Jaylen Brown offensively and made him think about the game and play the game in a way that he wasn't doing before. And I don't know if he would do that if he weren't playing with Porzingis. I mean, I know early in the season, you know, I don't cover a ton of games in person like you do, but early in the year, that first game against Milwaukee was the first game I covered in person. And immediately I could notice the chemistry between Porzingis and Jaylen Brown, particularly on the pick and roll. And I think that's just made him a better player. I think that presence of Porzingis, the way Porzingis thinks the game, the chemistry that they have, has had Jaylen look at basketball and how he can impact the game differently. And then I give him credit for this too, B-Rob. He said before the year that he wanted to make the all-defensive team in the NBA. And I think, you know, guys say a lot of things before the start of a season, but I do feel that he's been dedicated on that end throughout the year in terms of trying to play at a high level on that end and use his athleticism that way. So I think he's slid very nicely into that role. The other thing I would say, just as a quick aside here too, I know there's still people out there that question, can Tatum and Brown coexist? I'm not one of those people. I think you can put that to rest. I know they need to win a championship, but I think if they don't win a championship, it will be more because, you know, they didn't play well or reverted to some old habits than the fact that they don't have chemistry and that they're in each other's way. I feel like we can really put that one to rest. And you know how I feel about this one. I feel like if Tatum had been healthy and played better against the Warriors, that wouldn't even be something people could say because they'd already have a title.
Totally. Yeah, it's but I think you really made, I love your point just about the going into the Porzingis, like the, because has Jaylen had anyone in this career that he's like just like a pet partner for the pick and roll or just someone he could play off of? Well, because even like, because Al Horford was like, I guess he was that guy earlier in his career, but clearly, especially in this path, when as Jaylen has kind of ascended to try to be more of a ball handler and like, you know, selective distribution there, like Al's kind of been past that point of his career where that's like, you know, a strength of his at this point. But and now, like, for whatever reason, they just don't run a lot of like Brown Tatum pick and roll when we can, like,
yeah, that's
weird. They should do that or not. Like, it's just a fact. It just doesn't happen much. But now it's like, okay, this is someone, like, you have someone who has the full package to like play with you, with Porzingis being like, okay, he can bully little guys if they switch that, or he can pop if they're going to double you on the drive, Jaylen. And like you said, it seems to have just like unlocked just a lot of his, you know, more of his tool set, if you will, from a distribution standpoint.
Yeah, to me, B-Rob, it's kind of like a horse, right? You know, he's, you know, the horses that race with the blinders on. Like, yeah, that was kind of Jaylen. Like, he had the blinders on, like, attack.
It's such a good comparison.
And then all of a sudden, the blinders got taken off with Porzingis, and he can see a bigger picture now, right? And there are times I watch him play, and it's, like, so obvious that he's, like, trying to find Porzingis. It's like I could drive into the lane and draw a foul or get to the rim. Ooh, but I see KP at the 3-point line. So I'm going to draw these two guys, jump in the air, do a 180 and like flip it out to him. Like he literally wants to get this guy the ball. So I think it's just a different way of look. I think Porzingis has made both Brown and Tatum better players, but particularly Brown. I think he's had a real effect on the mental for Brown and the approach for Brown.
Football season may be over, but the action on the floor is heating up. Whether it's a tournament season or the fight for a playoff home court, there's no shortage of high-stakes basketball moments this time of year. Get in on the excitement with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app, where you can turn your hoops knowledge into serious cash. Testing my skills on Prize Picks this season is the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $1,000 with just a few taps. Prize Picks is really simple to play, and I can make my picks and submit my entry in less than 60 seconds. Download the app today and use code CLNS for a first deposit match up to $100. Use the code CLNS for the first deposit match up to $100. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
Two other things with Brown, I'm looking at as I'm noticing his season stats right now to throw out to you. One, in this recent stretch after the break that we talked about, these nine games, guess his total turnovers over those nine games.
I'll say, well, he's averaging a little over two a game.
Yeah, he's averaging over two a game.
20.
12.
Wow.
12 turnovers in nine games. That's 1.3 a game right now. And he's had a lot of high assist games. He's at like 3-4, 5-5, 3-4 in that stretch. So again, as we like looking at places of growth, like, and the turnovers, they're going to pop up and they're going to be ugly when they do pop up, but we're seeing more consistency on that front. And another sneaky part I like with him, I think it's going to be really important in the playoffs now. His 3-point attempts per game has gone from 7.3 last year to 5.8 this season. And obviously same playing time. So it's like out of those three shots he's giving up a game, 1.5 of those are from behind 3-point range. And I think that's great because just the awareness for him that he knows, like, he's probably the best guy in this team to get to the rim, the best finisher to get to the rim, and knowing that, like, that shot's there for him time after time when you have these shooters around him. So he's talked a couple times after games, Chris, about like, oh, I didn't get to the rim enough today. Like, I took open threes, but I should have driven more. And I think to me, like, that might be the key for them in the playoffs, because it's like, getting the less you rely on the three in those spots, the less volatility you can deal with on a game to game basis, I feel like.
Yeah, that's a great point. I mean, now he has to make the free throws. You know, he had the great
game against
Denver, and he missed half the free throws, and he's had some yips at the free throw line before. But I do agree with you in terms of that, because he's a guy that can help diversify their offense. And I think, you know, Brian Barrett had this number I saw the other day. And I don't remember the exact stat, but essentially, like, the points in the paint for the Celtics have gone up markedly since the All-Star break. So it does seem like there is somewhat of an effort to diversify this thing. Now, still, they're the only team in the league that, if you look at the stats, 40% of their points come via the three. And they lead the league in three-point attempts, obviously. So that's part of the Joe Mazzulla philosophy, which I don't love. I think, as you know, I don't buy into 3-point attempts are the most important stat in basketball. And the example I use is the Denver Nuggets. And I know, you know, Jokic, not everybody has a Jokic. Only Denver has a Jokic. But still, last year when they won the title, out of 16 teams, they were 15th in 3-point attempts. And when they went to go play the Celtics, they were 28th this year in the league in 3 points. And they have guys who can knock them down. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Murray, obviously KCP. Oh, I mentioned KCP, Michael Porter Jr. So they have guys who can knock him down. But I think when you sort of look at it, it is nice to see the Celtics, whether it's Jaylen or anybody else, just having that other tool in their toolbox on the nights the threes don't go. They're such a talented offensive team, and they move the ball so well that they should be able to overcome that and find other ways to put points on the board.
Yeah, to your point on that, like, they have great 2-point shooters as well with the Celtics. Like, the Nuggets have Jokic and a bunch of Aaron Gordon, obviously a great finisher, but Porzingis is 61% from 2-point range this year. Brown is 57%, and a lot of those are you know, mid-range too. So if you get to the rim for him, those numbers go sky high for those guys. So it's like they have the tools offensively to get to those spots when they want to. And like you said, like with the Nuggets, it's like we saw a game like Thursday was a perfect example of that. The Nuggets went like 4 of 19 from 3-point range.
4 of 21.
4 of 21, even worse.
Yeah. 4 of 21. And they still won the game. So I mean, again, I understand the math and I understand the way you want to play. And I think shooting a lot of threes definitely helps you space the floor. It's just you have to have an answer when they're not falling. And in fairness to Joe Mazzulla, the team playing that way and not having an answer predates him. I mean, back to the 2018 Eastern Conference Finals, you know, game 7. So it predates Joe Mazzulla. It's not all Joe Mazzulla, but that is one of the things you talk about with the Celtics is will they get into a series? And like last year, you know, off the top of my head, I know Jaylen shot 19% from three against the Heat and Tatum shot 23%. And that was a big part of them losing that series because there just was not like an answer. And I think that's one of the reasons Brad went out and got Porzingis is to at least give Mazzulla a potential answer. And then it's sort of up to him if he uses it or how he uses it.
Yeah. The first, I mean, the threes are going to be there. It's just like having alternatives when teams try to take the three away by switching like Miami did last postseason, or B, if it's just not their night for whatever reason. And to their credit and to Mazzulla's credit, like they've won a lot of games themselves in the regular season this year where it's like, okay, the threes weren't falling, but we hit the offensive glass or we got to the line and they have been able to diversify more of this lineup with Porzingis. And I think kind of under the radar, Jrue Holiday has been a kind of a nice big part of that too. After a rough start to the season, he's really come on offensively late, not like with the low usage, like he's still not shooting much, but it's just like he picking his spots. I seem like really well. And it's just a luxury, like to have him as a fifth option right now is just ridiculous for this team.
It's incredible, right? I mean, here's a guy who's been an all-star, averaged 20 points per game, I think multiple times in his career. I know he's done it at least once, won a championship in Milwaukee. And the fact that he's willing to accept that role, you know, to tie it back to sort of where we started, like that's real sacrifice, you know, not losing a shot and a half per game and, you know, 3 points on your scoring average. It's what Jrue Holiday is doing. And I don't think it's a coincidence that the only guy on the team with a ring, you know, the only player, because, you know, Sam Cassell obviously is a coach, one is a player, but the only guy that's won it as a player who's active on the team is the guy making that level of sacrifice. And I think that that is a good thing and a good sort of lesson for the Celtics as we go through this, that the reward is in the winning, you know, and the recognition is in the winning. It's not in the individual. Yes, you can get some recognition from individual accolades, certainly, but overall, you know, the real recognition that you want from your peers, because how many times do we hear or read B-Rob when Holiday was in Portland before he got dealt, people like, this guy can go anywhere, he can fit in anywhere, he can help any team. You don't hear that about a lot of players, and it's tied to his reputation as a winner, and it's been a seamless fit here. He's been great. By the way, who is the guy that was here before him? Who was the defensive-minded point guard? Who was that guy? I can't. Oh, what's his name?
Mr. Marcus Smart. Yes. Name. Your favorite.
I don't remember that guy's name.
Huh? No, it's. I wonder. I'm wondering if he's going to play again this year, or if Memphis just holds him out. Like they have so many guys hurt, you just think they'd probably would want to tank it here.
I think they should hold Marcus Smart out. You know, get the best draft pick you can. That team should bounce back next year, right? I like some of the strides Jaren Jackson has made. You know how I feel about Desmond Bane. I'm a huge Desmond Bane guy. That's been my guy from day one. We'll see if Ja can stay out of trouble. And then some of their young players with Memphis have really, like G.G. Jackson has been good. Jake, LaRavia?
Yep.
He got a lot of run as a rookie, and then they kind of iced him. But he's starting to get some run and knock down some shots. Memphis could be next year's Minnesota if they can get everybody healthy. I still like that team. I think this is like an aberration of a season for the Memphis Grizzlies. And all kidding aside, I think Marcus Smart will definitely help them if he can stay healthy and the guys around him can stay healthy.
Yeah, it is funny though to think just like what would this Celtics team look like? Jrue Holiday was the perfect replacement / upgrade on Marcus Smart. Like what would this team look like without Jrue Holiday, like filling in like the defensive stuff, being a more efficient, you know, 3-point shooter, offensive weapon on that front. Like if they had gone into the season with Brogdon and Rob, and you know, who knows if like the injuries would have happened the way they did to those guys, but it clearly the credits go to the front office for just jumping on that move when it was there. Arguably overpaying a little bit at the time to get Jrue, because it's like when you get a guy like that in the door who's willing to give up so much. And the contract, you're on top of it here, Chris. Like, it's something that even just talking to guys around the team, they just rave about, like, wow, like, yeah, it's easy to sacrifice when I see, like, look at Drew, like, look at he's having. This is the lowest usage of it since his, like, rookie year right now.
Wow, really? Oh, that's, yeah. That's incredible. I didn't realize it was, wow, since his rookie year. Yeah, this might be the, his lowest
like
usage.
15 years ago.
UCLA. Right. No, it's like, yeah, no, I mean, he's been great. And it, you know, the interesting thing, just to tie it back a little bit to Smart, however you feel about him as a player, taking him off the team, I do think unlocked Derek White a little bit. Mazzulla doesn't have to make a decision or worry about anything with playing Derek White. He's been outstanding this year, earned all-star consideration. And then on top of that, you have Drew Holiday. So what a luxury to have two guys like that playing at that level who can play point guard for you, who are two-way players, who can knock down big shots when you need them, but also if they have to affect the game in other ways and sort of be a little bit more passive in terms of hunting their own offense, they have no problem doing that, and yet they can still affect the game. That was one of the things about the Celtics, you know, sort of over the years. Like, I think about the Kyrie Irving years. That was one of my concerns about the team, particularly the year with, like, Marcus Morris and when Kyrie was chirping at, you know, Jaylen Brown and all the stuff that happened after that game in Orlando and what was going on. They didn't have enough guys, B-Rob, that could affect the game without scoring. They, like, the entire team looked at how they impacted the game as, well, I get the ball and score. And that's why that team didn't work. And this team is like the polar opposite. There are so many guys, including the superstars in Tatum and Brown, who are either able to affect the game without scoring or are learning how to affect the game without scoring. What a difference that is from, you know, the last time the Celtics had a team that was this hyped going into the year. That team obviously fell flat. You got eliminated in five by Milwaukee. You look at this Celtics team, and that team had such a rough season, despite the, like, kumbaya, you know, West Coast trip and all that stuff and whatever, all that stuff. They never got their stuff together. This team is like the total opposite. And also just look at Milwaukee this year. It's not a fait accompli when you throw a bunch of talented guys together that it's going to click and work. So, you know, we should, you know, maybe I'm guilty of this sometimes because I look at the big picture of championship or bust, but we should give the Celtics credit and we should appreciate just how good they've been this regular season and how quickly it's all come together for them.
Yeah, it's nuts just this how seamless it's been. And you even go to, like, nights on this road trip when, okay, Porzingis, Al's out, Jalen's out, second half of a back-to-back with, like, a tough time zone switch. And then it's just like, oh, yeah, Cornet, Xavier Tillman, Pritchard, Hauser, those are the guys now, like, year three of them, a lot of them being together now outside of Tillman. And the chemistry that group has kind of built this year, I think, is like a sneaky, underrated factor of how well this team, and who knows if, like, how much do you trust that for the playoffs versus just obviously seeing, like, it happen consistently in the regular season right now?
Yeah, I still have a measure of distrust when it comes to Cornette and Hauser. I'll say this though. I think I have to do a mea culpa on Hauser. You know, I never thought he'd reach this level of player in terms of both ends of it. And I definitely think you can use him in the playoffs. Now, you might not be able to use him every game of every series. I think there could be some matchups that are tough for him. But I have a lot more confidence than I did a couple of years ago or even last year in terms of Sam Hauser being – I mean, he should be, and I have confidence in him being a rotation guy in the playoffs. Like I said, there might be a certain games where you're like, oh, I wish there were another maybe more athletic, defensive-minded option here as a backup wing. But overall, I like him. Cornette maximizes what he's doing, but I like the fact that they have Xavier Tillman as insurance there. And I like Xavier Tillman with that physicality. It's a really well-constructed roster. You know, my level of concern about the rotation and the bench at this point for the playoffs is honestly a lot lower than it was at the start of the season.
Yeah, they've answered so many questions there. And the consistency has been there with that group. And even like the little things you were talking about, even a night like last night, like Pritchard, even when the shot's not there, he's still getting after it defensively or rebounding. And like you said, like the teams with a far more talent, whether it was 2018 or even other teams in this area, just like they had so much less of that now. And to be able to check both those boxes for this group is pretty big. But you brought up the Bucks in the East. I want to get your big picture view of like what stands out to you 65 games and now who are legitimate threats to you for the title, and who are legitimate threats for you, the East, to the Celtics, like based off of just how much of a whirlwind this both conferences are right now. It's kind of just a free for all after the Celtics and the Nuggets, which in a lot of ways, it seems like.
Yeah, I mean, the Bucks, it looked like they were getting it together, and now they've sort of gone backwards. You know, they lose on Tuesday night. They get absolutely smoked in a 35-point loss to the Sacramento Kings on the road. I know Doc's pretty bullish on the return of Chris Middleton. We'll see sort of what Chris Middleton has left. He was not moving well at all this year, and offensively wasn't the same player, and frankly, in my opinion, was a defensive liability on a team full of them. You know, it's really hard with that team when I watch them, B-Rob, because when you have a backcourt of Malik Beasley and Damian Lillard, that is just not a good enough defensive backcourt to not have somebody you can go to. And I know Crowder starts for them, but to have someone you can go to as like a wing defender. The Bucks, just because of how good Lillard and how talented Lillard and Giannis are, and I read the other day they're starting to do more pick and rolls between the two of them. They're working on that. I think they're still probably the number one challenger to the Celtics in the East. After that, I don't know. I mean, tell me, how healthy is Donovan Mitchell? How healthy? I'm probably more bullish on Philly than most. Maxey's back. They're going to wait on Embiid. So I still think it's kind of the Celtics, big drop-off, Milwaukee, Philly. We'll go from there. I know.
Do you believe in the Knicks at all with them getting healthy, or do you still think like that's – they don't like, no, they're not going
to
scare you.
I just don't think they have enough talent. Although I will say this, and again, I hate to do this, but I'm just doing my thing here. Josh Hart, greater than sign Marcus Smart. Like all the things people thought Marcus Smart were, that's Josh Hart and what he does for the Knicks. I like that team. They're feisty, but you know Tibbs. Like he's running guys into the ground and they've had injury issues. And I just don't think they have enough high-end offensive talent. I'm sure leaving out Miami will come back to haunt me, but I don't think that this is going to be one of those like Miami flip the switch years in the East. And then out West, teams, obviously, you know, it still starts for me with Denver, but I'm one of those people that thinks OKC and Minnesota are for real. Let's see what happens with Karl-Anthony Towns if he can come back from that injury. I would say I am not as high as a lot of people are on the Clippers.
Interesting. How so? Why? Why do you feel lower than them?
I just don't know if they can stay healthy enough to ultimately do this. I question their depth a little bit, and the James Harden factor of who he is at this stage of his career and what his playoff reputation is. I don't trust that team. I think they're like the anti-Heat, where like they're gonna play better in the regular season than they are in the playoffs. You know, everybody expects. They expect the Heat to kind of flip that switch. I think the Clippers are the opposite. They're going to go in the opposite direction. I could be wrong about that. And I'll throw one other team in there. I think if the Suns can get fully healthy, they kind of had it going there for a little bit before Booker turned the ankle, and I know he's back. I still think with Durant, Beal, and Booker and some nice complementary pieces, like I like the pickup they had of Royce O'Neal, that they have a chance. They have a chance to maybe pull off the Heat thing where you look at them in the regular season and you say, but then all of a sudden in the postseason, they up their level.
Yeah, they gave up so much. Like it's just watching that game on Saturday night. Like if they're getting anything out of Eric Gordon right now, or just like one other guy on the bench, you'd be like, oh boy. But even then when it comes to the playoffs, that might not matter. Like if, cause Durant and Booker, when they're going, scare the shit out of you. And Beal, for all his flaws, like that's still a legitimate number three option if he can keep his ass on the floor. So yeah, like I'm with you. I would take them over. I trust them more than like OKC or Minnesota right now. And yeah, maybe even the Clippers, because outside of Kawhi, like you said, like what's the playoff track record of the Clippers team? Like as a whole, team and the guys on that team. And the answer is pretty poor.
Let me ask you this about Phoenix, because I know I just kind of ripped Milwaukee's defense and not having enough defensive-oriented players. But when you look at Phoenix, don't they kind of have the same problem? I mean, Beal's not a great defender. Booker. Durant's
Nurkic isn't going to hold up.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, I don't know. That's the thing that gives me pause about that. So when I say the blanket, if they get it together, part of that is figuring out the defense and also trying to get guys to give you a little more effort-wise on the defensive end. That is the Achilles heel. Even when the Celtics beat Phoenix without Booker, Phoenix still played really well offensively. It's just they couldn't stop a nosebleed on the other end.
Exactly. And that's the thing. It's like you have to pray to a degree that like Durant and Booker don't have it going at the same time when they're going, because they will. They're one of those few teams that will just straight out like, we'll outgun you, like, we won't be able to defend you. But guess what? Like, you're not going to be able to stop us either. So, but for them to do that, you know, four times in a 7-game series against some elite teams in the West, I mean, that they're still in a situation where they're not even like out of the woods. They could be in a freaking play-in.
I know.
Given how tight it is.
I know. And I think they have to play like heck to stay out of that play-in. On the other hand, though, I think there's part of it is you look at it and you say, well, do we want to stay out of the play-in, obviously, but do you want to make sure you kind of stay at six and get the T-Wolves? Because if you jump up to five, as much as I don't believe in the Clippers, that's a much tougher first round matchup for Phoenix, I think, than Minnesota would be, even though I like Minnesota. You know, I do think they're for real, but there's a lack of experience there. So if you're Phoenix, I think the sweet spot is to stay at six and have that 3-6 matchup with Minnesota instead of jumping up to five and getting in a steel cage match with the Clippers in the first round.
Yeah, the posturing at the final week of the regular season is going to be fascinating out there, just given how tight that is. And like you said, the logistics of being like, all right, who you match up with better here, like roll the dice. To bring it back to the Celtics here to wrap up, like,
yeah,
what's your preferred path for them early? I mean, we'll see what it is, but would you like a real test in the first round,
allow
the Heat or the Sixers, or do you want the path of least resistance?
I want the path of least resistance. No, because like I covered the 2008 Celtics, and you know, they went to game 7 with the Hawks, team that they should have had a much easier time with. Sometimes when that pressure is on you, that championship or bust pressure, it takes you a little while to get going. And I think a margin for error in the first round would be good. Like, I definitely do not want to see Miami in the first round. And it's not because it's like, oh, I don't think they could beat them. I think they could, but you have to look at the overall toll trying to lift the Larry O'Brien trophy takes. And if you have to expend that amount of energy against a Miami or a Philly in the first round, that could come back to haunt you. Maybe not getting out of the East, but it could come back to haunt you in the finals. So no, I want like a tune-up. I do not want a very difficult first round matchup. Ideally for me, it's like first round, maybe you get like, I don't know. I'm looking at the standings right
Indy.
Now. But exactly. Indy. Cause it'd be a fun series, but you're going to beat them. I would say like Indy, the Knicks, because there's not a ton of travel. That would not be an easy series.
That's a good point.
But there's not a lot of travel involved in that series and you're better than them. Then you have the Eastern Conference Final against whoever. Let's say it's Milwaukee. And then I would prefer a path like that than to having to battle Miami or Philly in the first round. That I don't want any part of that.
Yeah, you go back to 2 years ago of when they like wanted, like they had the choice of like, do we want Brooklyn in the first round or do we want to dodge them? And they're like, oh, we want it. And then they swept them. But based on how the last two postseasons have played out, like the Hawks even pushed them to six in the first round last year, and then before the 7-game slog against the Sixers. And there's no doubt, like, if there's any lesson this core has learned from the last couple of years, it's like, yeah, they were out of gas in game 7 against the Heat, and they were out of gas at the end of that Warriors series. They just weren't able to, you know, raise their game another level in both of those points. So, and now not only do you have that preferred path, you have the fact that they could clinch home court advantage throughout the NBA, Chris, by like in 2 weeks, essentially.
Wow.
It is absolutely wild. So like, how do you think they play that? How do you think Joe Mazzulla and company play this? Are we going to see like all sorts of Jaden Springer and Svi Mihailić for like the last 3 weeks of the season? Or do you think like, what's the balance for you of the old rest versus, you know, rust debate here?
Yeah, it's tough. And normally I've learned over the years to sort of lean towards, hey, you know, you want to keep going and don't get rusty. But with this particular team and probably the most brittle or one of the most brittle front courts in the NBA between Porzingis and Horford, I probably lean a little more towards the rest. For example, a 5-game road trip that has, you know, back-to-back games with the Hawks.
Yep.
And then you go to New Orleans, all that. So I would like to see a lot of rest on that road trip. I'd like to see a lot of guys rested. I'm not sure on that road trip at any point I need the entire top six playing in the same game. which might be a little extreme. You do want to make sure you don't totally lose your edge or squander home court in the NBA Finals, you know, assuming you get there. But if I had to look at the scale down the stretch here with the Celtics, now that we are, you know, coming down the stretch of the final 17 games, I would put more of an emphasis on health than I would on finishing strong.
Yeah, it's just it's a complexion of your roster. Like guys like Derek White's going to play, Jason Tatum, you know, you can probably convince him to fit out like two or three games at least. But then you look at the rest of the roster, it's like Porzingis, like you just got to bubble wrap that. Like, all right, you get like 2 games a week tops at this point. And I think to their credit, they've already started doing this. They picked, you know, this after the Denver game, they're like, all right, that's a wrap for you on this road trip. And, you know, we'll probably see him here and there, but you certainly won't be playing back to backs the rest of the year, it seems like. And between him, Al, even Jrue Holiday too, is just like anyone, if you're over 30 years old on this team right now, like I don't want to see you breaking much of a sweat in these games regardless, unless maybe you pick a couple games, you circle, be like, all right, we want to go full board that game just to keep, just to make sure, like you said, keep your rhythm. But beyond that, it'll be interesting to see if they continue this like a freight train, like the 08 Celtics to the finish line at the regular season, or if they realize too that like once they start clinching stuff that like, you know, they can take your foot off gas a little bit.
Yeah, hopefully that's the thing. Now, I think for the next, let's call it 7 to 8 games, you want to keep approaching this exactly the way you've approached it all year long, which is you've gone hard, but you've found guys their rest. You do that, and then maybe you can give additional rest. It's still lodged in my mind last year, Al Horford, they made sure he did not play back-to-backs. That was part of Al's maintenance plan. But when it came to the playoffs, after the 76ers series, like he still looked fatigued. He still broke down. So just rest alone or guys not playing back-to-backs or whatever, that doesn't guarantee anything. I would be maybe more cautious, you know, this time around about the rest, or I would, as I said, lean more towards resting guys after this next 7 or 8 games when it seems like you can clinch stuff, just to make sure that guys go into it as healthy as they can with the most amount of energy as they can. And you give yourself the best. The other thing about the playoffs, and you know this too, it's not just physical. The playoffs are mentally draining, mentally taxing as well. So giving guys a night off from not having to think through the game, that could be just as beneficial as giving them a physical rest as well.
It's a really good point. I mean, it's tired for me just covering it for us. Like, and I can imagine, like, I'm not out there 40 minutes a night. It's like, oh, this travels are rough. And then like, yep, as you burned like 3,000 calories on the floor for these guys. Yeah, I think it's a huge point. Just the mental part of it is like underrated part of it, of any playoff grind.
But let me, you know, the flip side, and I'm going to ask you this. I mean, where do you land on this? Because there has been talk and some discussion about Joe Mazzulla, and I can certainly understand this from the other side, saying, well, okay, but I have to get guys physically ready to play 40 minutes per night in the playoffs. So where are you on that? Are you sort of like, hey, they'll find their playoff lungs when they need to? Or do you worry that if they do basically what I'm saying, which is really err on the side of caution, that maybe guys, when the playoffs start, aren't used to playing those minutes?
Yeah, I think I'm okay with that for most of the roster. With Porzingis and now, it's like, doesn't matter. Like, they can get their playoff lungs as they go along at this point, because it's just not worth the risk. It's not like, even if Porzingis has to start in the playoffs at 28, 30 minutes, guess what? That's probably a good idea anyway, because if you want to get him through, if you want to get him through 20 games of the playoffs, like if you're rolling him out there for 38 minutes a night, like the odds of that are just going to go down, like just naturally, because anytime he's out there, he's just viable to turn an ankle or pull a hamstring or something like that.
I just picture like Brad Stevens, Austin Ainge, Mike Zarin, Dave Lewin, all they have, like, you know, there's a shrine. They have like all the rabbit's feet. They have like all these things, just hoping, you know, just asking the basketball gods to allow them to get through the playoffs with KP and Big Al healthy. You know, they're probably trying like anything, holy water, whatever it takes. You're going to the church every day and lighting a candle for this, like whatever it takes to get these guys all the way through the playoffs and give yourself the best chance to accomplish the goal. And any extra little bit, or if anybody in that organization is superstitious, I'm sure that they're acting on that when it comes to Porzingis and Al.
The praying starts now for the last month of the regular season, just to get them to the finish line in one piece. But we will have plenty of time to analyze that and lose. Analyze. I can't believe we're a month from the playoffs here, Chris, but yeah, it will sneak up on us. But really appreciate you hopping on. This is a ton of fun. Again, obviously everyone knows Chris Bass at the Globe, but he's also had plenty of other spots as well, including the Sports Hub with Gaspar Murray every Saturday, 11 to 2 every week, and Boston Globe Sports Today on Fridays at 5. Does great stuff there, hitting on Celtics plenty, I'm sure, in the next few months here as we ramp up here for a fun playoff run.
Yeah, I can't wait. Celtics have been a great story. Certainly the team closest to a championship. And obviously there are, with great talent comes great expectations, and they have the weight of those expectations. But that's what makes sports the best reality TV out there, is you don't know how it's going to end. And so it should be a lot of fun to see what this team ends up doing.
All right. Thanks for everyone out there for listening, who's been checking us out here on the CLNS channel. Again, make sure you're following Chris at those spots and on, where was it? At C Gasper.
At C Gasper. You can find me on X at C Gasper. Yes. And then on IG at C Gasper Sports.
That's right. You use your Instagram far better than I do. I need to follow your Instagram game more.
I really don't. So if you're using me as a model, you have problems. You might need to talk to some of the younger people following this. I mean, I do post stuff on there, but my wife makes fun of me. She's like, you're like an old man on Insta. She literally calls me old man on Insta. So if you're using me as a model, B-Rob, you're in trouble. That's all I'm going to say.
I guess we're old now. I guess that's just the sad reality of this fact. All right. Thanks to everyone for listening here on Thursday. We'll be back with you guys with post-game after the Suns game on Thursday night. Thanks to Chris again for hopping on, and we will talk to you guys on Friday. Still part of them, still part of them.